Boogie can space the floor really well. And plus,
I don't want Boogie. No, I don't want Boogie. Stop it. Don't put Boogie there because you're saying one or the other pretty much. And I don't want Boogie.
I don't.
I don't want him. I just don't want him there. It's like you were trying to give me a fruitcake that nobody wants. I'm like, dude, I don't want the fruitcake. Just try the fruitcake. I don't want the fruitcake. You keep trying to give me the fruitcake. What's wrong with you? Just stop trying to give me fruitcake.
Okay. You're right. You're right.
All right, give me a little quick rundown. What are we doing here?
Well, we already started, man. Your first impression on this podcast was you yawning. How embarrassing.
That just tells you what kind of podcast host you are, brother.
Thanks for listening to Almighty Ball and the Almighty Podcast. I'm here today with James Hollis, who thinks that the Celtics should trade for Boogie Cousins. You know, let's talk a little bit about that, and then we can talk about what this podcast is going
to
be like.
I knew you'd come back to it. I was hoping you would skip it, but all right.
Nope.
So let's start off. Let me start off by saying to listeners, I owe Chris a formal apology because I basically bit his head off last show because he would not shut up about Boogie to Boston, and I was all, you know, I had my reservations, but he pushed to the point where I'm like, no, I hate Boogie, get him out of here. But
fruitcake.
When I watch, it's funny watching Boogie pick up that tech and, you know, what he did against Portland. That was my deciding factor, because the guy just likes to win, and he's been stuck in purgatory for the last 6-7 years. And sure, he's fiery and passionate, but I mean, his team stinks. What do you want the guy to do? So he needs to be freed. He's a super talented player, and I'd probably give up the kitchen sink for Boogie Cousins.
Yeah. Thank you. That means a lot to me. We're going to be talking about trades. That's one trade that we're not going to talk about, just because I feel like CBA experts, people much smarter and more math inclined than I, have seem like, you know, superstars who want to move are just going to like sign the supermax and then demand a trade a year later and get grumpy and stuff. So I feel like he's going to sign that initial contract offer with the Kings. So. You know,
and you can't blame him because I'm pretty sure he's not in line for the $200 million. It's still, he's in line for a whole bank full of money. So what do you expect him to do, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, go get your money, man. I mean, he's talented, you know, but we are going to talk about some other guys on some less ludicrous contracts. We're just running through a bunch of trade ideas because, you know, one, I haven't done this in a while. I haven't like revved up the old trade machine and talked about some moves I'd like to see. And two, I feel like it's particularly worthwhile right now because there are some really frustrating, at least to me anyways, moves that haven't happened that just need to happen.
All right, like what?
Okay, so like number one, every day that goes by that Nerlens Noel isn't the starting center on the Blazers, I die a little bit inside.
And see, that's the thing that I'm going to hold against Colangelo in Philly. Sure, they basically had a coup and they pushed out Hinkie. All right, that's fine. I understand why they did it. Even the NBA was complicit with that, but getting Colangelo in place there, that's fine. He's already screwing the pooch. I'll say this: by draft night, he should have been gone.
Right,
Nerlens and or Jahlil should have been gone by draft night. So that's on them, and they're like you said, every day that goes by, they're pissing away the currency of those players.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing is, pretty much right away. Who's that rookie of the year who was on the 76ers? Got Michael Carter Williams.
Michael Carter Williams.
It was like right after his rookie of the year bid, right?
Oh yeah, a few months into it, they're like, "Yep, he's not learning to shoot. He doesn't feel what we're trying to do here. Just get rid of him."
Right, because there was this fundamental understanding that, like, this guy's value isn't going up, you know?
Exactly.
And, like, sometimes your value peaks right away, and sometimes that's what you have to do. You just have to swap it, you kick the can, you know, down the road a little bit, and so you get a Lakers top three protected pick, and, you know, we'll see what happens with that. But, like, yeah, it to me is insane, and, like, I don't understand it. It seems like, and in light of...
I'm going to say Philly is so worried about the optics. which is why they brought up Colangelo and he started, you know, I get it. Hinkie might have been too far the other way where he didn't communicate with players and their agents. He didn't really, he was a bad communicator. Okay. Now Colangelo is so worried about optics that, you know, they're thinking we just drafted this guy. So basically this is the thing. They're worried about the optics in Philly. When you got a guy who you drafted the third pick and, you know, right after him, when our guy to New York, Kristaps, and it's the optics of it is a guy like Colangelo probably is thinking, because I'm thinking about Okafor and not Noel, is thinking, well, we just picked this guy so high and you know, he can score so well in the post. We got to figure out a way to use him. And we can't just trade him for scraps. They're so scared about trading a guy for, you know, two quarters for a dollar that they don't realize that the longer they hold on to these guys and teams can get scout reports on them and get data on them, it's going to go from two quarters for the dollar. It's going to go down to, you know, three dimes, four dimes. So Colangelo already, I think, has a couple missteps in Philly.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I'm a bit conflicted about it, but only a little bit. It sucks, I guess, that Colangelo just all of a sudden had these three big men who are incompatible in his lap. But you start to feel a little bit less bad when you realize that there was a coup and Colangelo basically just assassinated Sam Hinkie and stole his job. So, I mean, Sam Hinkie may or may not have had a plan, though. You know, Joel Embiid is there. It's fine.
And you know what's crazy? The other night I was watching them play, and they lost to the Kings.
Yeah,
and they got to the point where the butt smacking fest.
That was great.
But it was like the last couple of minutes. I think did Embiid foul out or he hit his minutes count and they pulled him. And like now Philly has no rim protection in with Embiid going to the bench. And in my head, I'm just like, you got Nerlens Noel sitting on the bench. He hasn't played a minute all night. What are you guys doing?
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, God. All right. Nerlens Noel for Allen Crabbe.
Yeah, I floated this one a couple days ago because I would almost say that Philly would want to do that, but Allen Crabbe hasn't even shown he can do what he's being paid to do right now.
You just need to get Nerlens Noel out of there.
I understand that, but – and I know Philly has the cap space to you know, can easily absorb Crabbe's $20 million a year, or, you know, almost $20 million a year for the next, 4 years. They can do it. I don't know if that's the – that probably is low down on their list of priorities as far as deals they can make.
All right.
It would take, maybe another team getting involved and getting some good picks because they want at least probably a couple juicy picks if they're going to take that money back for Allen Crabbe.
Here's my thinking with Allen Crabbe. You can start to make the argument at this point that Nerlens Noel is a toxic asset, that they would need to take something, you know, like absorb a lame contract or something. Like, I don't know, a couple more months of this, a few more quotes from Noel and his camp. It might have to be Evan Turner for Nerlens Noel like that.
See, and you're saying that. So explain to me what makes him toxic.
Nerlens Noel.
Yeah.
Oh, nothing personally. I think he's going to be a great NBA player. He's upset because Colangelo is seriously damaging his career. He's a young lottery pick in his prime, shoved on a team that doesn't have space for him and not given any minutes. When he says, this is effing ridiculous, I'm only playing 8 minutes a game and I'm better than this, he's absolutely right. He's toxic because it's a toxic situation.
You can say the situation toxic, but you can't call him toxic because
again, I like Nerlens Noel a lot.
He was a number what, six pick, five, six pick,
something like that.
Yeah, you know, something. So he was a number five, six pick, and he's right. He proved himself his rookie year that he's too good to play 8 minutes a game.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree 100%. It's just not a good look for the Colangelos. That's the thing. Is like the further Colangelo strings this along, you were saying the optics, right? Let's say that down the line, instead of getting Crabbe for Nerlens Noel, you get Crabbe and a first rounder. Is two more months of this crap, is that optically sound? Is that good? Like keeping this in the locker room, like, you know, continuing to torture this poor kid. He just wants to play basketball.
But I mean, that's the problem. The problem is that right now his contract is very palatable. And I guess, again, people were saying this about Hinkie, but this is what Philly's doing now, you know, with Colangelo. They're treating him like an asset. They're not treating him like a person.
Yeah.
So it's weird to see, you know, how people killed Hinkie for this stuff, and then they praise Colangelo for coming in with the human element. They're treating this kid like like cattle, because basically he's like, I want to play. Well, they know he's on a controllable, you know, a controllable asset, rookie contract, so they know they don't have a big rush, so they don't care.
Yeah. So the reason I like the Allen Crabb move, one, the least that you could say about Allen Crabb is that for the 76ers, he's an asset. You know, your ball handling is going to be mostly run through the four, through Simmons, hopefully. You're looking for a point guard who, like Bayless, is able to shoot threes. Like, you just want a 3-and-D guard. And that's what Allen Crabb has shown that he can do. And, like, I think that it wouldn't be a ridiculous notion to me to say, okay, 76ers playoff team of the future includes Allen Crabb starting at the two, Joel Embiid, and Simmons. Like, you've got 3 out of 5 of your starting pieces.
The thing, you're saying 3-and-D, he doesn't really play defense. He's not a strong defender. And I mean, you know, they're giving him almost 75 mil. He's giving you what, 8-9 points a game right now on a team that desperately has, you know, they play a wide open style, kind of like a mini Golden State. So, I mean, he's giving you 8 points a game, 9 points a game. I mean, I don't know, man. Sure, it's a bad deal, and Philly can absorb that, and you know, then they have at least a role player. And I know in the new cap environment, now 4 years, 75 mil. I know it's not the end of the world, but he's making 18 mil a year, dude. That's just tough to swallow. It's not the most horrible deal, picks or whatever. It's just let's keep going with that one. I'm pretty sure they can find something better than Allen Crabb.
Yeah, we can run back around, and like, you know, I think you're right. That might not be true anymore, though. We'll have to see. But sticking with the Blazers, so if they don't go this route, what do you think about CJ McCollum straight up for Whiteside?
So I was. It's funny you say that, because I was just talking about Whiteside, and let me tell you what this is my thoughts on Whiteside.
Oh yeah, I saw your tweet. You said he's mentally soft, but he's a really good player,
and
right?
I changed it. I added more to that. I expanded it, because that sounds really messed up to call an NBA player mentally fragile. I know he's been through a lot to get to where he's at, so I can't really call him mentally fragile.
Are you projecting? Is that what's going on?
What I'm saying is, yeah, the guy I'm talking to right now is mentally fragile, and I was kind of like projecting on it. Now, What the thing that I was saying was, if you're paying this guy almost $25 million a year to be the face of your franchise or to be one of your pillars of your franchise, I watched him tonight. He gave up. Steven Adams and Enes Kanter ate his lunch the first half. They got into a big hole. He played a little bit. Like, he picked up the intensity like 4 or 5, 6 plays in the fourth, but the game was almost out of reach, and then they ended up losing by like 12. I don't know. I think to deal with Hassan Whiteside, I think Hassan Whiteside is almost everything people think Boogie is, as far as he's kind of a head case. And to deal with him, you got to have a really strong vet, a couple strong vets, and a really positive infrastructure and a winning situation. So I don't know. I love Dame as a leader. I don't know if he would have the respect of Whiteside yet because of the age. And, you know, I think Whiteside's older than him, right? And the contracts are going to be comparable. And I don't know if Portland is in that strong situation to deal with him. So I wouldn't be. That's not a bad deal either. I actually like that deal better than the first deal.
Yeah. Anyone who's making a move for Whiteside has to calculate all of those things.
It's bad. Whiteside's bad. He's not bad. He's a fine talent. But I feel bad for Miami. They just handed him that money. And this is not the first time I've seen him do it either. There was a game against Philly earlier this season. I'm pretty sure they won, but for the most part, Embiid was just doing kind of what he wanted, and Whiteside just looked like a grumpy old man out there. And, you know, first half this game, Adams and Kanter were just playing volleyball on the backboards and just killing it, and he had like 3 rebounds. You know what I mean? It's just he's so talented. I've seen him when he's on, but how do you make him on more? That's the question.
The Thunder did just play the Kings, speaking of Boogie, and Adams had like 24 and Kanter had 22 on like 80% shooting. I'm in a weird place though with Whiteside, because I think it's a little bit, I think that their situations are a little bit different, if only because, like, I just honestly don't think that Whiteside is as complex mentally as Boogie is. I think that Whiteside's almost like a little bit of a meathead.
My point with the Boogie thing was that he's a malcontent. He's a malcontent, and while Boogie will get mad and he might, you know, shoot 10 for 28 because he's just flailing out there and they get a couple of techs, Whiteside will just stay out there and just hang out and shoot a couple jumpers and just let the guy, he'll just kind of check out mentally.
Yeah. You know, actually, that is a real concern I had going into the season. But, you know, on fit alone, if you like, you know, put the armchair psychiatrist stuff to the side.
Right.
He's a hyper athletic, rim rolling, best shot blocker in the league, big man who you can put in pick and rolls with Damian Lillard. And let me tell you, man, I have watched a lot of the Trailblazers, and Miles Plumlee is the worst center who's starting in the league. Is it even Miles Plumlee? The Plumlee that is on the Blazers, I can't stand him. He's the worst.
Yeah, he's not very good. Luckily with his contract, it's not the end of the world, but yeah, he's not very good. So, I mean, this is the thing with that. Dame wants to play fast. The Blazers play best when they play fast. Whiteside doesn't play fast.
Whiteside's really fast, man.
He can be fast. He doesn't play fast. I haven't watched a lot of Miami. When I have watched it, sure, when he wants to book it down the court and rim run, he can. But he also will loaf down the court. And I don't know. He needs a better situation, maybe. And maybe Miami, you know, after this year, does something with it. I like that better than the crab for Noel.
Well, so here's my thinking, right, with the whole Whiteside, Damian Lillard pick and roll thing. You know, the Blazers, they set those ultra high picks like up near the tippity top, near the mid court,
almost half court. Yep.
Right, yeah. Right. Whiteside's foot speed is really fast, and I know what you're saying in terms of he doesn't play fast. He's got like probably the fastest reaction time of any non-Kawhi Leonard player in the league, and that's how he just has these absurd blocks, like five a game.
The timing for the blocks, but nah, DeAndre is definitely faster than he is.
Okay, yeah, it's, you know, yeah.
We can argue, about the semantics, okay.
Okay, so I think Whiteside, though, you know, his movement in terms of lateral movement, certain aspects of his speed aren't entirely impressive, right? But like, imagine that high pick and roll with Whiteside going downhill. Holy crap. Who could deal with that?
I just don't see it. I get the idea of it. And that, you know, that's the thing about him. I think so much of him is tied up in what people think he can be. But I mean, we're forgetting the guy's like 27, 28 already. And there's a reason he didn't stick in the league the first time. And he had to go, you know, play overseas or whatever. There's a reason. And there's a reason that even last year, Chris Bosh and Wade had things to say about his maturity, and they were very careful, and you know, they said it very politically correctly. His focus and the way he played, there's a reason. So that's my thing with him. But I mean, hey, he's averaging what, 18 and almost 15 right now. So
yeah,
the numbers will be there. I just don't know if the focus will be there, and the impact is always going to be there for the money you're going to pay him.
Yeah, I'm in a similar boat. It's just like, it stylistically is such a great fit that maybe you can override that mental stuff. That's actually another one, moving on to another trade idea I had. And I've been pushing this one for a while. So Brandon Knight and Alex Len for Nikola Vucevic and Elfrid Payton.
That's like trading a bag of dog poop for a plate full of cat poop.
Well, okay. So you remember Brandon Knight on the Bucks, right?
I do.
Okay. So I think that Brandon Knight in Vogel's play heavy system as like a bailout parachute option, like they're so desperate for someone like that. And I think that Brandon Knight is playing so terribly in large part because he's just like pissy, right? But he essentially could be the guy on the Magic, and he's at least a competent enough defender that Bucks team that was a top two defense, he was starting at point guard for that team. So I mean, hell, maybe Bismack Biyombo, Serge Ibaka, Brandon Knight, Aaron Gordon, like, you might have something there, right? And then Alex Len, you know, bring him off the bench for Bismack Biyombo, and then you really, truly have that elite defense that Frank Vogel wants, right? Regardless of whether it's Alex Len or Bismack Biyombo starting. So, do you get that for the Magic side?
That's not bad. I get you for the Magic side. That's okay. So, here's my rebuttal to that, is that, so I know that players like Brandon Knight are supposed to be in the mold of Jamal Crawford, what's my guy's name for the Laker?
Lou Williams.
Yeah, Lou Will, I get it. You know, the microwave score off the bench. And I thought Brandon Knight could be that, but there's two problems. One, he thinks that he's a starting point guard. That's his big beef. That's the biggest problem with him and him in right now in Phoenix. He really believes he's a starting point guard in this league. Two, his awareness is so terrible because all he wants to do is score. And I thought Milwaukee was a good situation for him because of what they had around him, and he looked a lot better than he was. But the more I've watched him, because I thought the same thing. I thought he'd help Phoenix a lot this year. He's not. He's really one. He's so much of a black hole and a ball hog that it. Maybe you're right. The situation has a lot to do with it in Phoenix, but it's bad. He's really really bad, man. It's almost like a video game where you know the guy in the game has a shot rating of 98, like 78. He's gonna shoot you out of a game, and it's bad. So I get it though, and they need to do something in Orlando. So I can see your Orlando reason. So all right, I can sign off on that.
Well, so I agree like 200% with everything you just said, and I think that's part of why he didn't fit in a guy like Hornacek's offense, right, which is more free-flowing, liberal, has a lot of ball handlers. And then now Earl Watson just isn't the restrictive type of force that he would fit well in. But now it's funny because Jason Kidd, when he was on the Mavericks with Rick Carlisle, would butt heads with Rick Carlisle and just say, let me run this offense. And now Jason Kidd is like running every single play for the Milwaukee Bucks. And in a lot of ways, that's what has to happen because they have weird spacing issues and interesting fits. But I mean, there could be like 15 different options in any given Milwaukee set. And I have issues with Brandon Knight's decision-making too. I think the reason why he's fit...
It's bad. It's bad.
Yeah. And the reason why he fit in Milwaukee is because he wasn't making decisions offensively. The ball would get going, you know, down the pinball machine or whatever, and he didn't really have the option of saying, okay, I'm just going to take over and huck up a shot. I think that Frank Vogel runs his half-court offense like that, and I think when you have one of those, you know, multi-pick set, a lot of curl-offs, a lot of weird stuff, half-court offense, like the very, like, 90, early 2000s type of NBA play-heavy offense rather than, like, the Warriors, right? I think when you have that, you really, really need a release valve. Like, someone who is like Kemba Walker, who you can just say, oh, crap, we ran our stuff, and there's 5 seconds left on the shot clock.
He's not that guy. He wants to be that guy, and he thinks he is. He's not. He's bad, dude. He's like Dion Waiters. That's exactly what he is. He's a slimmer Dion Waiters. So that's not a good thing. That's exactly what he is.
Yeah.
A slimmer, more accurate Dion Waiters. So I've already signed off on that, I guess. I can see the reasoning for it. You take what you can get, and Orlando needs to take what it can get right now. So I get it.
Right. And Orlando's giving up Vucevic and Payton, right? They're bad.
Again, it's like I said, if I'm going to, you know, I give you a present, you give me one, I open up and you got a dead rat in mine and inside of yours is a dead possum. It's not really great either way.
I'm glad I got the possum.
Yeah. I get it. Because think about, you're moving around. You're getting like Orlando gets younger with, you know, younger than Vucevic with Lynn, but then it gets older with Brandon Knight. And then, you know,
you get a pick and roll partner. I mean, Vucevic and Bledsoe makes sense, right?
No. Because, again, they play fast, they play loose, and that's not Vucevic. And Elfrid Payton, there's nowhere – Payton to me is like Rondo right now, where he's like a better Rondo, of course. But he's actually a pretty decent player, but he can't shoot.
Yeah.
And, he's had some really good games off the bench for Orlando lately, but it's – He can't shoot. It's so tough. And what role is he going to have? I guess obviously backing up Bledsoe. But then they already got what's the guy they just drafted?
Tyler Ulis.
Ulis. There you go. And he as far as backup, he's what you want. He's a change of pace, and he actually, I've seen him come in the games and like he'll turn the tide for them, right? He can actually hit a shot or two. So I just feel that Payton would be superfluous there. Especially when they got guys who already want to handle the ball, and Warren, Devin Booker likes to handle the ball. Bledsoe's there. He'd kind of be like a square peg in a round hole.
A couple things.
Okay.
the Elfrid Payton Len part of it is just because it's two guys who I don't think panned out in their original locations. You know, let's just try a change of scenery, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The backbone of the trade is moving two guys who aren't happy in their current roles on bad teams.
That's fine. Yeah, I can see it for both teams. Yeah. Here's the problem, because I think, what are they going to do with Len? Because I think Len is due for a payday here soon, bro. I think Len's contract's coming up here soon, and he's at the end, nearing the end of that rookie deal, where it's time for either the rookie extension or whatever, I think.
Yeah, no, you're right. You know, maybe Orlando will pay him, maybe he'll leave. Whatever. Len has not been spectacular.
They got to pay Surge, too. You know, they got to pay Surge, and they just paid Biombo, and they just paid Fournier. So it's, you know, Aaron Gordon's contract's going to be coming up here soon, too. So, but I'm sorry, we're getting too deep in the weeds. This is about the trade. I like that trade side better for Orlando, I guess.
Well, so let me explain it for the Suns, though, right? Because, like, I mean, Vucevic's best quality is his mid-range jumper, like his free throw line extended game, you know, within the three-point line, but, you know, comfortably away from the basket, right? And you're right, they do have, you know, on their just in their starting lineup alone, you could put Marquise Chris, who wants to dribble the ball sort of in a downhill type of way. You know, they have, of course, Bledsoe, Devin Booker, and TJ Warren, right? So now you put out Vucevic, like a true legit 7-footer who has a mid-range game, so run him off of picks. Like, just have him be like a stationary pick and pop, except he doesn't even pop, he just stands there.
I mean, it sounds good, but there's a reason he doesn't play in Orlando, because he can't defend.
But they have no defense anyways. That's part of it. It's like they're already so bad defensively that, like, what's the point
anymore? So just toss it to the wind, I guess, man. That deal, it makes less sense for Phoenix to me, but what do I know?
You don't know anything. You thought that
obviously not. I didn't like Boogie the fit in Celtics.
Okay, Shabazz nice. Muhammad, Brandon Rush, Gorgui Dang for Kid Gilchrist and Roy Hibbert.
Did you run all this through the trade machine?
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot of money, and that works?
Yeah.
So Shabazz,
Brandon Rush, Gorgui Dang for Kid Gilchrist and Roy Hibbert.
No way in hell does Charlotte do that.
Why?
Because Gilchrist is there for more than his statistical output, which is not going to be great. It's going to be kind of pedestrian. But when they're hitting on all cylinders, it's because he's doing everything defensively. He is the defensive equivalent of maybe, I don't know, what's a do-it-all offensive player. That's young. Devin Booker, I guess. I don't know. He really can be a game changer defensively in a way that nobody's sending back. Nobody wants Shabazz. Shabazz is a gunner who is maybe last year, if Minnesota tried that, they would have got something good for him. But I think he doesn't play defense. He doesn't do anything. He just shoots. What's the guy's name? What's the guard you're saying in there too?
Brandon Rush.
Brandon Rush is what it is. He's just he's always going to be a contract filler and the bench and the rotation kind of guy. And that's just how that is. And that would be really good for Minnesota to get.
It'd be exactly what they need. I'm inclined to agree with you, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be great for Minnesota. Somebody who doesn't need a lot of shots, but can be a game changer defender. You can play him at power forward besides Cat. You can play him at three. Have, you know, slide wings up to two, and now you got, you know, long rangey guys in the wings. So he'd be great there. It's just, yeah, Charlotte would laugh and hang up.
So what if you add next year's first round pick, top three protected?
I think also because they got Kid Gilchrist on a really good contract right now that it's and he's a known quantity. Prone. Is he hurt now? No.
I mean, he just came back from a shoulder thing and went straight.
Yeah,
into
he's been back. I think he's been back. Let me see. So I still think that Charlotte is at a place where they no longer want to take steps back and sideways. They want to take steps forward. And yeah, they're kind of scuffling a little bit now, but we've seen them right now. We know even right this year when they play defense and they're rolling, they're really tough. And sure, they're not really an upper echelon top two or three seat team, but they know they can go give anybody a run for their money any given night. And Kid Gilchrist is a big part of that.
I mean, I just feel like if Charlotte did it, it'd be because Steve Clifford believes in his ability to make any center the center in a top five defense, even Al Jefferson, right? So you put Gorgui Dieng in there alongside Kemba and Batum. You just have this super spread floor, you know, and then you trust your defensive system, which may or may not fall apart if Kidd Gilchrist is gone. It didn't fall apart last year. So.
Well, I'm saying this, like, we've already seen they had a nice, they won three or four, but they also lost four in a row, then they won three and they lost again. They've been scuffling, and I'm sure the defensive numbers look decent this year, but...
It would open up the floor a lot.
Yeah, but you're giving up too much defensively. He means a lot to them defensively.
Yeah.
You know?
So I agree with you. I think that there's some logic there for both teams, but I think that guys like him... Guys like Andre Roberson are really undervalued.
I'd say especially him. Roberson is just so bad offensively. Like, he's really bad.
They're a really horrific team without him on the court. Defensively.
Who's that? OKC?
Yeah.
Yeah, Grant helps a lot. And Oladipo would help a lot. But sure, he's definitely the best defender. And that's a whole different ball of wax. I think they actually need to move Roberson because he's not where they are as a team is not where they need a guy like Roberson, but that's just me. I know why he's important. He's a great defender. And I know that, like they're saying, like, let's say OKC is looking for a second star right now. Having him there is like a selling point, and it's going to, you know, it's good to have a guy like that. I get it. I just don't know, since they gave Oladipo and, you know, Cantor's already got paid and Adams that money. I don't know how the path to find another star is pretty. It takes a lot of things to fall just right. They're going to pay Russ, you know, his $200 million in a couple of years. You know, did you hear this about the CBA?
No.
They are allowing, because that the whole new max, the max contract deal, right? It's like you have to be on your, for the super max extension or contract. You have to be on your, I think, first contract, and then you have to be the team that drafted you, right?
Okay.
Well, they actually snuck a provision in there for OKC.
Oh, yeah.
Where
yeah.
they can offer Russ that money next summer. So,
right. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. I think for that team, like a team like, let's say, the Clippers that are kind of close, he would be. He might not put them over the top for Golden State, but like I'm just saying, a team that's close would need a guy like Roberson. Oh, and he's about to make at least he's probably about to make $15 million a year starting next summer, and that's where I'm saying OKC kind of they don't need a guy like that.
I think he should go to the Wizards. I think he should replace Markieff Morris.
It's the same thing. Like, sure, he would definitely help a lot defensively, especially. And with a guy like Otto Porter, you have these two bookend, long, fearsome defending wings. That's awesome. He really is bad. OKC is making the best of a bad situation as far as, you know, they get him on the floor and they're winning games. I'm watching him blow layups. I'm watching him, he stifles the offense because sometimes he's scared to shoot. It's pretty bad.
I agree with you. I just think it's an interesting new paradigm. I think the Spurs have quietly done this. They've started this trend of playing your rim protection from the outside in.
Mm-hmm.
I think with Kawhi and Danny Green, they pretty much use this like double dig system, weak side, strong side. I've been calling it, instead of playing on a string, it's like tug of war, right? They're just pulling back and forth, going strong side, weak side. And anyone who drives gets their drive disrupted by either Danny Green or Kawhi Leonard on a dig or just on some type of disruptive play, like Kawhi trying to slap at the ball.
I get it. It's just that I'm just thinking about the Wizards. The problem with the Wizards is right now they're it goes beyond personnel there. And I really think that.
Is there a trade?
I think so. I think one of those guys has to go.
Come on, pull it out. Load the trade gun.
I don't have my trade machine up right now, so I can't give it. But I think they just gave Beal that money.
Yeah.
He's there for, what, 4 or 5 more years?
Yeah, I think full 5 years, yeah.
So it's not going to be him going.
Well, it could be.
It definitely could be. Somebody would probably take that contract. And you know what? A team like Philly might want to get in on that.
I really like Bradley Beal when he's on the court.
I do. As long as he's healthy, I like him better than I like John Wall.
He'd be an interesting move for a team that's confident in their training staff.
That's the main thing, right? Because as good as John Wall is,
San Antonio.
Yeah, definitely San Antonio could use him. And Dallas wouldn't say no to him, obviously. I mean, they'd pair him with Harrison Barnes. And the problem, I guess, there is Wes Matthews is already there. So now what are you going to do? I mean, I guess you
move
play
him
Harrison
to,
Barnes.
The Wizards.
Yeah, that's not bad. That's not bad. I mean, it doesn't really make the Wizards better at all, but they get out of Beal's contract, and they maybe, you know, might help them chemistry things.
They get a high first-round pick next draft.
Napa know how. The Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolored paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how.
Wesley Matthews?
I hope Dallas doesn't do that.
Yeah, I'm from Dallas, so I don't... I really, really like Bradley Beal, though.
I do, too. He's really good.
Yeah. Okay, so... Covington and Hollis Thompson for Ish Smith and Marcus Morris.
What?
Yeah.
That's pretty good for, I like that for Detroit. And I guess Philly would do it. I mean.
You get Ish Smith.
That, exactly. Why? Like,
the that's White like, Knight.
Are you threatening to punch me in the face? What are you, like, are you threatening them by saying I'm seeing you? No, Ish is fine. He's fine. But I mean. Sure. So what are they moving? What's the reason they're moving Covington and Hollis Thompson?
Well, Hollis Thompson because the Pistons want someone who can shoot threes.
No, I'm not asking why the Pistons want him. I can understand the Pistons get long. They get two more long athletes in, and that'd be awesome to go with Tobias. I get it.
Okay.
But why would Philly want to do this?
Okay. How about let's make it Covington plus whoever Philly decides they don't want. The main part is Covington. I want to pair Covington long term with Tobias Harris.
That's pretty cool. And I guess again though, my question with even with that, why would Philly give him up? Because I think they got him on a pretty good contract.
Well, I mean, have you seen his shooting percentages this year?
He's been bad this year through 30 games, but like coming into this year, they there's a reason they kept him around. I get it that he's been bad, and you know he's not earning his minutes right now.
You know, I have this thing with Covington where I feel like he's suffering from the same thing that Marvin Williams suffered when he was on the Hawks, and the same thing that Luol Deng was suffering from before Chris Bosh went down last year. I think Covington's been forced to play the three, but he's a four, and that screws him up.
Okay.
So Luol Deng was liberated once he was at the four. He certainly wasn't averaging 10 more points and 4 more rebounds because Chris Bosh was gone. Like, Chris Bosh is great. He's good for his teammates, too. He got a ton better because he wasn't being beat by his man on defense. And then on offense, you know, if you're coming off of a screen, instead of having, you know, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist trying to catch up with you, you have Zach Randolph, and that's all the difference. So, yeah.
I guess the big thing is, again, he's only making $1 million a year till 2018. And that's like that's crazy value. And I guess you ran these through the trade machines they work. But how much is you said Marcus? How much is Marcus making this year?
Marcus Morris is on a really good deal. Remember, he signed that twin deal with.
Oh, yeah. Him and his brother split the money. And then Markieff took the big chunk. That's right. So he's at like 7 mil, something like that, 6, yeah. 7 mil a year? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I guess I don't see how that makes, like, I guess Philly doesn't really care about getting better. It's just that doesn't seem like the best way to use the assets of what they've turned Hollis Thompson and Covington in.
Well, okay, into. So take out Hollis Thompson then. Put someone else who's not as good.
But Covington, he's not shooting great this year, but he's a, you know, he has what they value. He has length, he has athleticism. He's pretty young, I think. How old is he? He's only, he's 26 this year. Oh, 26, so he's in it. 26. Yeah. He'll be 26 this season, or he's already 26, which is right in the prime of his career, and making $1 million a year for the next two seasons. That's really hard to say, give me Marcus Morris when you know what he is. And Marcus Morris' best position really is probably – he plays some small forward, but again, he probably plays power forward better, and he, you know, that's where Saric and Ben Simmons are going to be. So,
yeah, I mean – I don't
know if that makes any sense for them, really.
I don't know. I think he makes a little bit of sense next to a ball dominant guard. Like, he can create a little bit off the dribble, space the floor a little bit. And you know what, man, Marcus Morris is a good defender. That's a low key thing.
Yeah, he's been really he's been instrumental in Detroit's defensive scheme. That's been a pleasant surprise. And he's also better offensively than they probably knew. But again, you got Embiid and Simmons need the ball, and he's such an ISO heavy guy. I don't know. The deal sounds great for Detroit. I mean, I've heard crazier deals. I don't know why Philly would do it.
How about, like, what if you can dump Jared Bayless's contract? And then so it'd be Bayless and Covington. And Bayless looks like he might not ever play again. That's why I'm saying dump.
I'd say give him Covington this year. I mean, not Covington, Bayless. Bayless is making,
I think, like nine a year for 3 years.
Yeah, that's pretty good money. Oof. 27 million what they gave him. Oh, which again, it's not saying that, but like, you know, they said this cap's going to hit what, 120 in a couple years. So that's a drop in the bucket, really.
The Pistons take on contracts like that. They're not going to sign free agents anyways. That was their whole philosophy with trading for Tobias Harris and stuff.
And then how much is Morris making this year? For how long is Morris's contract? I think it's about to expire, maybe.
I think it's got like two more years.
Huh. I guess it's not that. That
did, oh, it's just makes 5 million. Sense, you know, Marcus Morris's contract is five.
Is it? Yeah, his brother got the big chunk. Then that's crazy. But yeah, it's not terrible, dude.
Like, well, whatever.
That one, at least that one makes more sense than the rest of them do. For at least a little more sense for both sides, I guess.
Okay. All right. So. Salah Mejri, you know Salah, right? Okay. For Patrick McCaw.
I got nothing. I mean, that's another deal where that's just one of those fringe deals. I don't think it would make a difference for Golden State.
It's putting a rim protector on the Warriors. I love it.
Come on. I mean, I get it. He's not going to play. There's a reason he's not going to play. He's just not going to play. I mean, but... So in theory, it sounds great. You know, McCaw's not going to really ever get serious minutes there, obviously. I don't think. Sure, that I can get behind that one.
All right, great, good. okay, so I think this one might be my favorite of the whole list. So Valanciunas, Ross, Terrence Ross, right, and Powell, okay?
Okay.
For Drummond and Reggie Bullock. All right, okay. So the Raptors, you know, they were better with Bismack Biyombo, and they're better now with, you know, crazy Afro-Brazilian bro, along with the starters. Valanciunas is great. He's awesome. He serves a role, but not when your two operative offensive players are guards. You should just be like, set big boy picks, rebound the ball, play good defense, and just roll, right? It's like... Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan are some weird version of Chris Paul and J.J. Redick in a parallel universe. And you want DeAndre Jordan, you know? Meanwhile, Andre Drummond is not quite what Stan Van Gundy wants in terms of, like, his post play and his ability to finish and his finesse and his athleticism and stuff. I think Valanciunas is a little bit closer to what he wants. And then you get Ross, who's shooting super-duper well from three. Same with Powell. So, like... You know, you get Valanciunas, who I think is a better Stan Van Gundy rim roller than Andre Drummond is, honestly. You get two really, really, really good three-point shooters. One of them is a 3-and-D guy, right? You know, you can start Powell, Reggie Jackson, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Tobias Harris, and then Valanciunas, and then still bring Terrence Ross off the bench. That's some shooting. That's good.
It's not crazy... It's not crazy bad, I guess. I'm not that high on Valanciunas. I get it. Him
are you that high on Drummond though?
The money they just gave him too. It's just he's not as skilled at all as Valanciunas, but just that sheer size and athleticism, I guess. And he's only what? Isn't he only 22?
Drummond?
Yeah.
Valanciunas is 23.
No way. Is he?
Yeah.
Holy crap, I didn't realize that.
Is he? 24.
Are you sure? All right. Drummond's 23 also.
You got to admit, Valanciunas in Stan Van Gundy's system makes a lot more sense. You know, like, he's always posting up Drummond for these weird little actions. Like, you know, that's not what he wants. He wants, like, a player like Jonas.
Well, what he wants is, a player like DeAndre Jordan. That's what he wants. Like, he wants a guy who'd be happy just running pick and roll and dunking everything on the rim. That's what he wants. Drummond's just, I have no idea why they keep posting Drummond. I guess I'm more attached to the idea of what Drummond can be than what Valanciunas is. So
the Pistons are just like hitting the skids right now. You know, like, they recently put Tobias Harris on the bench and started playing John Luer instead.
That was a really good move. That was a really good move because until they get reacclimated, they were at their best last year with Ilyasova in the lineup, and Luer can replicate a lot of what Ilyasova did. And I don't know, man. I personally think the way they're built right now, they'll be fine in a couple weeks. But I that would feel like a panic move, what you're talking about.
But it's just like, what's the ceiling on this Pistons team?
I mean, what's the ceiling when you have Valanciunas? I don't think it's much higher.
Have Valanciunas and a bunch of really elite 3-point shooters.
And like, then what?
The offensive
what
are you doing? Ceiling on that is pretty profound.
Again, you're saying what's the ceiling? I mean, are you beating the Cavs like that? Probably not.
Sure, maybe. I don't know. I mean, like, okay, look. You know, if Kentavious Caldwell-Pope works out the way that people want him to, you'd have one 40% three-point shooter there. You'd have another one with Norman Powell. You'd have another one with Terrence Ross. If Tobias Harris is on the upside of his offensive and defensive development, you know. Valanciunas is young. He could get a little bit better. Stan Van Gundy could teach him to be a better big man, too. And then, you know, there's Reggie Jackson, right? I think that the offensive upside on that system, like, Reggie Jackson, Valanciunas pick and rolls, right? And then some of the best 3-and-D guys in the league. I think that's good. I think that would be a really, really good team.
Well, you like it a lot more than I do. It's not terrible. It sounds good on paper. Drummond is literally the most athletic big man in the league. That's not just an opinion. Like, he's been to that sports science academy, and they've timed him, and they've looked at his balance and his body, and I just think it's. I get it. Everything's not about athleticism, and he hasn't shown a lot of improvement the last couple of seasons since he's been in the league. And you got to kind of start wondering when is it just him and who he is. But man, okay, I can buy that one though.
Yeah.
I guess the only question would be: would he be happy there? Like you said, with the two Gunners in Toronto, you're paying him $28 million. And how do you keep him happy? That'd be the question. You so
win basketball games.
I mean, that's why they're posting him now. The big man wants touches. These are professional athletes with egos. So I don't know, but I get it because this is probably the best one you've come up with so far. That's pretty good.
Okay, you're gonna love this, and by love it, I mean you're probably gonna hate it. Rudy Gay, Collison, Cauley Stein. For Solomon Hill, Cheek Diallo, and Drew Holiday.
Rudy Gay, Collison, Cauley Stein. For Drew Holiday, Diallo, and who else? Solomon Hill?
Solomon Hill, yeah.
That's not bad. That works. Who run the point? Well, I guess you got Collison run the point in New Orleans then?
No, you got Buddy Hield.
He's not a point guard. Yeah, he's not a point guard. So Collison's running jokes. Point, yes. That's not bad, I guess. That takes care of, you get Cauley Stein, give Drew Holiday to DeMarcus, Cauley Stein playing beside Anthony Davis. Yeah, that's pretty good.
I thought you were not going to like that.
No, that one's all right because, yeah, they got to do something. Drew Holiday's not – I guess the only problem with that is you don't really solve anything because now you got Rudy Gay there too. So what are you doing? I guess is Cauley Stein come off the bench? Rudy come off the bench?
No, you're starting Cauley Stein, Anthony Davis, Rudy Gay.
Rudy Gay can't play the three. You don't want him playing the three.
Well, but it's the Pelicans.
That good point. Touche.
And I think that maybe it's okay to play him at the three if Anthony Davis is. I mean, like,
it's not.
That he's Anthony not, Davis, Cauley Stein, 4-5, that could be ridiculous.
So, yeah, that's why I guess you're making the move. And anyway, Rudy's leaving after this season because he's tired of playing on crap teams, so that's fine. And you're basically just dumping, you're getting Cauley Stein and they're dumping Rudy, so that's okay. Yeah, I could dig that one.
Okay.
I guess the only problem is you don't address the real problem in the biggest issue in New Orleans is that you can't just have the like a Dirk Nowitzki type team where you're just a superstar and a bunch of role players, and that's what you still have in that situation. So,
well, yeah, but you open up like you get a redo in terms of money because that Solomon Hill contract is off the books. And Drew Holiday opens up a ton of money. So
that's Solo Hill contract. That Solo Hill contract's not terrible. I don't think so. I think Solomon Hill's a really good role player.
Yeah, so dude, I thought so too. I don't know. I have some optimism for him playing the four, which is why I want him to leave.
That's my thing. And that's why. Well, no, they did that the other night. They started him at the four the other night.
How'd it go?
They won. They started Brow at center and Solomon Hill at four, and they looked good.
Are you talking about really against the Mavs?
Yeah, I know it's the Mavs, but they look good. What do you want me to say?
Yeah. I thought that the Solomon Hill thing was going to work out. I went on a limb.
But see, again, you know what? This is a thing where you're giving a role player and you're expecting him too much out of him. Because if you have two really good players, he's great. You have, you know, two really good players and a third guy. He's great. But if you're expecting him to be like to really shine as sometimes I have to step up and be somebody on a team where you have a guy like Anthony Davis and then everyone else, that's too much for him. So I think it that team is just poorly constructed. So maybe you're right. Maybe he does need to move. Maybe you're right. But I like Solomon Hill and he's a decent player.
Okay.
He's fine. He rebounds. He played some defense. He's actually hitting threes a little bit this year. League average the last 11 games. He's hitting 35% of his threes, 7 points. He's not bad. It's just the fact that they're going to look bad playing on a team like Pelicans right now. That's the thing.
Look, man, okay, next time Zach Harper comes on my show, he's going to break me like he broke me before with Solomon Hill. I can't psychologically deal with that.
Did he say that he wasn't good?
He just hates Solomon Hill. It was like us arguing about Bogey. Well, he was just wrong with you?
Were you being that annoying? No, I guess, and hey, it's fine. I get that Solomon Hill only made a few threes, like for the first time ever last season, and so people are very leery. But I have no problem with that kind of guy, man. He's a big, strong body. He's gonna put stick his chin out there and take a hit. He's 6'7". He's strong. He can play anywhere.
He makes a lot of sense as a power forward next to Boogie.
No, I think actually Cauley-Stein will make a lot more sense next to Boogie.
Well, Willie Cauley-Stein's on the Pelicans now.
I know, but that's my whole point. Besides Boogie, you need length. You need a length and a better defender because really, oh, he can, but he's not gonna. So you need a springy shot blocker besides
Boogie. Scalabrine is going to be better than Cauley Stein.
I actually liked him, and I actually had him ranked very high in the draft, but, I mean, he can't even get on the floor right now, and there's a reason. I mean, he's a couple years away, so.
Well, or he's on the Kings.
Yeah, I mean, that's the point. You're saying he's going to be better than Willie Cauley Stein, but he's on the Kings. So is it going to matter? Who do you really have?
Well, so, I mean, Willie Cauley Stein's going to go to the Pelicans and, like, tear his ACL and they just won't do anything about it and he'll lose his leg to gangrene.
Yeah, I just,
that's the type of stuff that goes down in New Orleans, man.
It's sad, dude. I really feel bad. And it's as bad as I can feel for a guy making, you know, what, 20, 25 million a year or whatever it is. I feel bad for Brow. I like him. He's so talented. And if you put him in a good situation on a good team, you're going to be a contender. They screwed the pooch building that team.
Yeah, if only he was on the Celtics.
any team. I would love him on Celtics, but I'm not even just being a homer. If you,
yeah,
I
want no, to, if I he was on the Celtics, that'd be great. Team.
Oh, dude, him, Al Horford, and even little Isaiah. That's there. I still don't know if they challenge LeBron because LeBron's a cheat code, but it'd be a lot. Yeah,
I don't even know. Anthony Davis could be a cheat code.
He can. He's not LeBron, and that's like look what they did with Giannis, and hey, look at Dele playing beside LeBron. It'll work so well here in Milwaukee. He's not LeBron James, and it shows. And that LeBron is just he's next level, dude. He's getting to that point. Like I think he's already in the all time top five.
Nah, dude, LeBron's overrated.
Yeah, I heard that before from other people.
No, I'm just kidding. I think LeBron's the best basketball player ever. I think he's better than MJ.
You know what? There was a time when I would have told you you were an idiot, but I mean, the things he's done already, he's making a name for himself.
Yeah,
I can't even really argue with it. The fact that I can't even tell you like hell no, do you watch basketball when you say that nowadays? That's how far he's come.
Yeah, he's well, I think with that, it's always like an argument of syntax. Like, what do you mean? Like, if I was going to build an organization from the ground up, I would take LeBron. If I was trying to win a one-on-one game, I'd probably take Michael Jordan.
Prime. I mean, you're forgetting. You're acting like Mike was just a scorer. He averaged like 35, 8, and 8 1 year.
He wasn't an entire system, offensive and defensive, in the way that LeBron was.
I mean,
LeBron made Mo Williams an all-star.
I get what you're saying. I mean, Mike made B.J. Armstrong an all-star. Do you even know who that is?
Is he that bald dude? The bald light-skinned dude?
we're not even getting to the whole debate because, like I said, you have a definite argument. But you know, you're saying like, oh, if I just needed a one-on-one contest, give me MJ. No, Mike was a lot more complete player than people. I think especially a lot of youngsters nowadays don't understand what a complete player Mike was.
Yeah, no, it's okay. Anyways, whatever. So, right. What was the last trade we talked about?
We just talked.
We did talk.
Which one were we just talking about? The Kings. Kings and Kings and Pelicans.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess we can just end this episode in like an existential crisis.
No, man. I thought we had one more to go.
Yeah, I have one I could bring up. Do you want to touch on it?
Yeah,
it's a three-way trade.
Let's do it.
All right, okay, last one. So, Luol Deng goes to the Timberwolves. And Ricky Rubio goes to the Kings, and Rudy Gay goes to the Lakers.
Yes. That works. That's probably one of your best ones yet.
Luol Deng, you know, he gets to the Timberwolves, and like, you know, it's like,
He's reunited with Tibbs. They need a veteran presence. He can play some small, mostly power forward.
Yeah.
Size cat. If he has anything left in the tank, that's good. Rubio, they need a point guard desperately in Sacramento. He still can't shoot, but at least he can run offense.
And Rudy Gay could be like Nick Young.
It doesn't matter. Who cares what the Lakers are doing outside of getting those guys development? We all know him and Nick Young. I mean, the problem, and he's gone this summer. He doesn't want to play for a losing team. That's what we know that. He thinks he needs to go somewhere and needs to win. He's actually a decent player. He's absolutely right. So he's leaving this summer. He won't stay there.
Yeah, we'll see.
So, yeah, I actually like that one for all teams involved.
Yeah.
The only problem is you got to find another point guard in Minnesota because Chris Dunn's not ready yet.
Okay, so what if you move Marcelo Huertas?
Huertas, you go. Yeah, he's there.
Yeah.
Again, he's not a starter. I mean, and I guess they don't really need one now. They do need one, but okay. From Minnesota's perspective, that's not enough because they think that they still should be good this year. But just for I like the deal for them.
Yeah.
I guess. You can just throw Dunn into the fire. They need Deng's leadership. It's not bad.
Well, I mean, the question becomes, is there like an inherent issue with having Zach LaVine at point guard? Or is it just when he's at point guard and running your offense? You could run the offense through Cat and Wiggins.
You know what, man? I try to tell people that, like, because people are still stuck in this idea of a point guard, and I'm like, dude, you got this guy, you know, he's 6'5", he's quick as heck, he can shoot lights out. You can have him function as your point guard. If you're gonna run offense through Karl-Anthony Towns anyway, which they probably should be doing, make Zach LaVine your point guard. It doesn't matter. You don't need him to direct the offense. If you need that, I mean, find somebody else to back him up who can play beside him at times, but put him at point guard. Look at Russell Westbrook. Look at Steph Curry. The best point guards are guys who can just really fill it up these days, right? They're unstoppable scorers, and that, you know, their scorers first, maybe, you know, distributor second. That's fine. So
I want Zach LaVine to be J.J. Redick.
No, you're insane.
Why?
You know what? This whole episode, I've been thinking about how rational and just put together you were, and you finally.
Okay, so what's your problem with that? Just like coming off of screens all the time.
Because you do not relegate a player of his athleticism and talents to J.J. Redick. You just don't do it. If that's the case,
what's your problem with J.J. Redick?
No, J.J. Redick's great. He's fine. He's absolutely fine. He is one of the better two guards in the league right now, and he's made full advantage. He's taken full advantage of his lack of. Because he's athletic, he can run, but you know he's not an overpowering guy, so that's great. Zach LaVine is so much further advanced than that. You're trying to pigeonhole him into the wrong role.
Okay, listen. All right, so Ray Allen then. All right, like I'm saying that I want him just to be that guy in the Doc Rivers / Thibodeau system that just runs off of screens constantly and is just always active.
You're telling this is where people lose things because on paper that sounds great. You got this 21, 22-year-old kid brimming with athleticism, brimming with talent. You're telling him, hey, man, you know, we know you think you can do all this with the basketball and you like the chance to do it. We're going to want you to just to do this. You don't do that to young players because that's when you got problems.
Dude, Ray Allen.
Yes, before Ray Allen became that, don't forget Ray Allen was a 25-point-per-game scorer who could shoot any chance he wanted to for like years in Milwaukee and Seattle.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Reggie Miller plays a similar role to the one I'm describing, or played a similar role to the one I'm describing.
Because Reggie Miller
and he was the star of that team, you know? Because
Reggie Miller couldn't handle the ball, and Reggie Miller couldn't defend for the rest of his life.
I know.
You're not going to take a player like Zach LaVine and tell him, hey, just run off screens, and we're going to find you, and you can score 16 points a game. You're not going to do it.
Well, I mean, like that and drive and dunk.
And there are times when people right now are already saying that LaVine's going to be better than Andrew Wiggins.
I think he could be better than Andrew Wiggins playing that role. I don't see why you can't average like 24 points extremely efficiently. You know,
he's not Klay Thompson. He's not going to just run around and shoot jumpers off screens all day. He's just not going to do it. That's just not his game. It sounds good. It's just not his game.
He can come off of screens and drive too.
That's just not his game. I actually think one of him or Wiggins probably has to go eventually. Because I think his game is just too big to be confined to, hey, you're our third option. Hey, you're going to run off screens and catching and shooting while Wiggins and Cat do all the heavy lifting. I honestly feel, looking back on Russ and KD, that was, no matter what, it wouldn't have worked. Because both of them, just their game is too big for each other. I think it was just too much. And you imagine throwing Harden to that mix too. Everybody's saying, oh, keep Harden too. It's just too much because I really think it gets to the point sometimes with really good players where one plus one and one, and it's three players, it doesn't equal three or, you know, equal four when you want, which you want a synergy, right? Where one plus one equals four. I think sometimes when you have guys with too much overlap to their game, you get one plus one equals 2.5. And I think that's kind of what we saw at the end. Where 1 plus 1 was equaling 1.5. They never really got the best out of each other because they both needed the ball in their hands so much. So I think that's what you'd have with Zach LaVine, Andrew Wiggins, and Kat. You're going to tell one guy, hey, you know, when you got three guys, one guy's also going to end up sacrificing touches. That's how it goes, right? Like we saw in Miami, right? Eventually, Chris Bosh said, I had to step back, and I really had to just take
so have Carl Anthony Towns do that.
He's not going to do it. He's the number one pick, the rookie of the year. He's not going to end up saying, hey, I'm taking 14 shots a game.
That's what Kevin Garnett did.
That he's not Kevin Garnett. And Kevin Garnett did it at the age of 30-something, not at the age of 20. This is
– Carl Anthony Towns, I think, is 45.
That's fine.
Let's be real. Look at him.
No, he might have a nice, you know, well-aged game. But I noticed this the other night. This is why people keep doing the Kevin Garnett comparisons because they like it and it sounds like it's a neat story. Against the OKC the other day, towards the end of the game, he didn't quit, but I could see him turn off.
Yeah.
I watched him turn off in the game. I watched him shoot a quick – he let Stephen Adams on the hook, pulled a corner jumper, and then tried it back down the court while Stephen Adams booked it and dunked the alley-oop.
That game was really scary to me. You know, I've watched a lot of third-quarter collapses from the Timberwolves – But they just like had no shame in that game.
Well, and this is why I look back and I talked to a lot of people this summer and they told me I was crazy because I said, I don't think Tibbs is the right. I said, I'm going to reserve judgment if Tibbs is the right fit for this team. Tibbs took a ready-made playoff team and made them better in Chicago. That's excellent. He imbued the defense. He made them better. I get it. This is a team of kids. It's a whole different ballgame than taking a team of ready, playoff-ready adults. And I wonder if he's gotten a grade on them already. I just hear him just bellowing on the sidelines all game. Some people aren't built for that, dude. And these guys are 21, 22. I just don't know if it was the right fit.
Yeah, no, it's increasingly looking like that might be the case, which is like, you know, I mean, the Timberwolves were definitely the team I was the most off on.
About this last podcast?
I don't think so.
Because this is one of the teams I've been spot on about. That's where I'm kind of patting myself on the back about it. But go ahead. You were saying the one you were kind of off on.
Well, yeah, no. Like, I was up with Tim Bonteps. I thought they were going to be a 50-win team.
This is when I was wrong about a couple of teams, but this is one I didn't see it for these reasons. They're just – you want them – you were people saying – because a 50-win team is on the cusp of being great. Do you agree with that? That's a very good team. On the cusp of being a great team. No, just in the fact of saying if you win 50 in the NBA, you are a high quality team, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So last year they weren't even they won how many games last year? You don't go from being
29.
You don't go from being a no quality team to a high quality team overnight. That was my main thing, and I feel that a lot of people did the same thing with Cat that they did with Anthony they did with Brow. After the first year, he was so good that the next season his projections were out. This year he might break basketball. He's going to be a top three player in the league. And while he was very good the second season, he wasn't any of that, right? He wasn't. And they did the same thing with Cat this season. Oh, he's going to be a top five player. He's going to revolutionize the center position this year. He's going to dominate. They're going to win 50. You can't put that kind of pressure on a young player because he's still learning how to play basketball. As good as he is, he's still learning how to play basketball. So. That's the one I was right about this year that they're taking their lumps, man. They're a young team. That's what people talk about trades. They don't need to be trading. They're taking their lumps.
And even when I thought they were going to be a 50-win team, it's like all that stuff makes sense and they were concerns. It's not like it was a lock. It's not like I was saying like, yeah, they'll be a 50-win team in the same breath that I was thinking like the Spurs would be a 50-win team. Anyways, man, like don't you have some locked on Lakers BS to go talk about?
Hey, man, I'm always here for you, brother.
No, dude.
I'm just trying to extend the olive branch. I yelled at you like you're a redheaded stepchild about Boogie Cousins, and then like 2 months later, I'm like, yeah, give me Boogie Cousins. So I got shame, man. I have shame in a little bit of, you know.
Dude, you're good, man. Just don't worry about it. We've got solid podcast rapport. If this makes the final cut, I'm sure that they can tell that we're friendly. We just have a bit of a rivalry thing going on, you know?
I really don't like
it. Like that, you know what I'm talking about? Like that, the mock rivalry thing? It's good.
Oh, you think it's mock?
It's a fun dynamic.
You think it's mock? Nah, it's good, man. You're a good guy.
Thanks, Doc. Well, so my guest today, at J-Holus Hoops, right?
That's it, at J-Holus Hoops.
Yeah, no, definitely. And keep an eye out for him. He may be popping up around almightyballer.com, blogtalkradio.com/ABPN in some capacity. Whether that, you know, is in one form or the other remains to be seen. But yeah, no, we should do this more often. Man, no, thanks for listening to all of that. We'll see how long that was. Just so the listener knows, before editing, this podcast was 4.5 hours long. So.
No, 4.5? Dude, we started like 8 hours ago. What are you talking about?
Right. All right. I'll talk to you later.
All right, brother.